The Indigenous Story Bridge Adventure Climb provides a unique opportunity to explore Brisbane's iconic story bridge while at the same time learning about the city's Indigenous heritage. The unique experience is the result of a partnership between the Birunga Gallery and Howard Smith Wharves. Now, I'm happy to say I'm joined by Birunga Wiradjuri, founder and principal artist of the Birunga Gallery. Birunga, first of all, thanks for joining us and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us about this unique Indigenous tourism experience and how it will change the way visitors get to know Brisbane from a unique perspective or even a vantage point?
Thank you. I just got to start off. I'm Eastern Plains Wiradjuri, and we're operating here in Meanjin with permission and through ceremony with the TOs, and we've got some really beautiful relationships over a very long period of time. So we recognise that we have no cultural authority here. We always engage respectfully and continue to engage respectfully in those relationships and really ensure those relationships laden with reciprocity and respect. So that's kind of the get-go, because having permission culturally and sanctioned culturally to live, prosper and do business here means that we're able to make opportunities available for the education of the dominant paradigm and, for people coming in from overseas, because, that's kind of the thing. The people that are from here, the Gabbars, aren't always the most receptive to these truths, whereas overseas people really are. It's quite an interesting dynamic. So we get an opportunity to, have checked in about what stories we tell here, my family law storytelling. So it's a bit of a natural for me. But we got a great relationship. Luke Fraser's the CEO of Howard Smith Wharves, and he and I have developed a friendship over the last little while, like probably 2 or 3 years now. And, how these things go, one thing leads to another. And when we found out that Howard Smith Wharves purchased this adventure climb, I started just to think about, you've got this unique opportunity, this unique position on the top of this bridge, where you're kind of surrounded 360 degree by air and country. And when I first went up and did the climb, I was actually pretty dragging my feet a little bit, because heights don't worry me, and I'm pretty pressed for time. But I went up, and when I got up there, I realised a couple of things. And one of the things was, in particular, that the stories of the climb that have been when we're not doing them, really about how many rivets are in the bridge, about, that it constitutes the shortest highway in Australia, and some other bits and bobs around. And when we're up there, and there's other black fellas, the team from our crew came up as well. And I found myself sort of saying, I was looking to the horizon and finding where the bunyas were and where the hoop pines were. And you could see up to the Glasshouse Mountains. I think it was Mount Biwa up there. You could see and over Mulgulpin and Minjerribar, and then off back down into the west. I started sort of thinking, maybe our role is to contribute to, some sort of counter perspectives. One in particular was that when you're standing on the Story Bridge, you're actually standing on the eastern perimeter of the exclusion zone around the story of Boundary Street. So when you're on that Story Bridge, you're above Main Street. That runs down to Vulture Street, which runs across sort of west to Boundary Street in West End, where the flag, the Koori flag is on the intersection there, right down Boundary across the river to the northern Boundary Street and then back along. And you've got the opportunity to let people know, look at this real estate. This was the real estate when the colonials set up camp here, where they, local blackfellas, were excluded from dusk until well after dawn. And if you're in that space, the consequences were dire. People that grew up here don't know that story a lot of the time. And those Boundary Street stories are right across, they're across the continent, but in Queensland, the way I understand it, is pretty much every street that's called Boundary Street demarcation zone. And then that opens up other opportunities, because it knocks them on their tail. It really does. We just did it the other day. We went up for a photo shoot with Tourism Australia, and they had a group of, talent that looked great on camera and all that sort of thing up. But we had to go through the stories anyway. They were getting cranky because we had to stop going, halfway through the story, because we had to do different poses or the sun was in the wrong spot or whatever. But, even in just that, even in just that context, it was very well received. So it's exciting.
It's really interesting you said that the locals don't know about it and you get more interest from overseas visitors. Why is that?
You know, look, I'm guessing, because you can't be in people's shoes, you know, but I think both, you know, the colonial presence here and the overseas people both have this preconceived notion about who we are, who mob is, you know. But the people from the people that are here already have this, you know, I think, you know, if they hear a counter perspective, it may be welcome, but it's probably a bit challenging. And it's certainly inconvenient to their, you know, continuing internal narrative about how things are when they start to, because I don't know, you know, not many of them have less than 2 or 3 degrees of separation between mob and themselves, you know. Whereas the overseas mob, they tend to think that all the blackfellas are at Uluru or whatever, and they're really open to finding out more, whereas the local mobs, not local mobs, but the local gubbars, they've got a conviction about how things are in their mind, and I think it's just a little bit more challenging for them to come into the realities of their entitlement than that privilege. That gets challenged quite quickly, whereas the fellows from across the way don't necessarily have that to deal with. And we work with it. I mean, that's a cultural responsibility where if we're standing up and telling yarns that are truth-laden, then, you know, there is an education aspect to that. My experience is, for the better part, if people are signing up for something that where there is truth-telling as a part of it, they are interested. It's very rare that you get severe pushback, but, you know, we were up there the other day and a fella started telling me how it was. But it wasn't that he was being ignorant or arrogant. He was just trying to contribute. And the body of information that he was working from to contribute was pretty severely flawed, you know. So then that was an opportunity for me to gently sort of engage with that and talk about things from our perspective rather than from the colonial narrative. And that meant that everybody that was there, and there was fellas from Asian descent, fellas there and that sort of stuff. And so you just use the opportunity, you know.
Yeah. And yourself, you're a cultural practitioner and a visual artist. But the climbs are led by indigenous guides from different backgrounds telling their stories. What can you tell us about the stories they tell?
What the deal is the way this came around, I've developed a couple of experiences for tourists around the importance of place. And those products have been, you know, really well received. When Luke and I started talking about what to do with this, I realised, like, so those products, I began developing them in, like, 2016. And, you know, it takes time. But I've got chops there now, I guess, and there's a bit of crossover that I can do. So I just said to Luke, look, I'll invest some time in being, you know, so I'm training up and the other guides, participants or graduates from our cultural creative development program, which we run for young or youngish emerging First Nations artists. We kind of include these things as a part of the curriculum. So then you've got not just storytelling, but you get public speaking. You've got, you know, a whole lot of different skills that come out of that. So in the initial instance, I'm, I guess you'd say, heading it up. Well, certainly to keep a gauge on what stories are being told, because they need to be contemporary. You know, they need to not, then, you know, you can't be talking for the local, the Yuggera Turrbal Jagera mob around anything like that. So it needs to be kind of in the public domain. Just because it's in the public domain, that doesn't mean that fellas really know about it. And then you've got a very short period of time, because the climb goes for about 2 hours. You know, you are up there for a fair while. It's certainly, you don't just get up and come back down, but it's a short period of time, and the information that's available, I mean, you're standing there looking at, you know, there's a particular school there that gets, you know, celebrated, and but the story that we've got there is, you know, they talk about it being an amazing thing for putting young women through and all that sort of jazz, but what they don't talk about is, you know, they had First Nations girls from here in servitude there, unpaid. One of those Ben girls was only dawn daylight up here, you know. So we can tell those sorts of stories. And I guess it, my commitment then is to have the young ones, like, say, young Kane, Brungie, Taisha, Martin King, So Kane's Gungari Kabi Kabi lad, Taisha's Bunjalung from down by Yugal, and then there's Jess Skeen, who's a Gukul Taipan girl, and they're artists in their own right. We'll work together to develop the framework that will sort of inform how that grows and develops. And then I guess, you know, let's see what happens from there. But investing, you know, significant time in developing it so that it's a stable and organic, if that makes sense, you know what I mean? Like, it's got to have everyone's flow, you know, each individual or each mob's flavour too, really, into it about how they tell their stories. But basically, we make sure that we're solid in what we do say and what we don't say, how we say it, and about letting people really know. Again, that thing about having no cultural authority here, we need to make sure that we're responsible with that.
And it's said that the climbs are not just about storytelling. There is also sindigenous foods and including you know, native herbs and spices, and there's also the throwing of boomerangs and painting workshops. It's really a lot of things to experience during a short period of time. What can you tell us about these other experiences?
I mean, we've been up there a few times now, 4, 5, 6 times. And I remember going up with Jess and T. And so what happens, you're on the south side of the river, actually, Kangaroo Point, and you go up the eastern side of the bridge, you go up to the peak, you have a bit of a Doris, tell the stories and, you know, whatever. Then you go down that side to about halfway, and you walk across over the roadway, and then you reverse it, right, and you come back. And when we were coming back on the city side, Jess and I had a moment that, I don't know, something else was going on. We just sort of, and she said to me and T, she's looked over, she's gone, that park down there. And we're looking down. And she said, I can still remember. So when she was a little girl, her dad, Uncle Joe Skeen, used to teach Japanese tourists how to throw the boomerangs down there, right? They'd be a bit iffy about it, about doing it, because they didn't want to lose face, or, you know, like, they didn't want to get it wrong. So Uncle Joe would get Jess, who's the youngest daughter, or the youngest of the kids, to come through, and it was almost like, oh, well, if she can do it, you can do it thing. So she'd come in and throw the boomerang. And so we're standing up, you know, soft, and she's telling me stories about about all this sort of stuff going on. Yeah. And then we have our own catering. We offer, I think they call it a native tasting platter. So you got roux, croc, emu, and then everything, like, you know, finger lime and all that sort of jazz through it. They're pretty, I had one, I was sort of had a bit of a graze on one yesterday. They continue to be very good. But then Jess is going to do a boomerang painting workshop down the bottom, which will be an addition, you know, after the climb. I took my time to come around to it, because I'm not really a fan of that kind of, well, you're nearly a ticker box kind of thing, you know, like, oh, let's paint a boomerang and get to know the blackfellas or whatever. And not to be dismissive, I mean, these things, if they're purposeful and there's a point to it, I'm all for it. If it's just ticking a box, I'm not. And I talked to Jess about it, and what ends up being the thread through that interaction is they get a different perspective, because they've just been up the bridge, say, with me, and they've got some different stories. They come back down, and then they're going to be hearing about, I don't even call it, they call it fake art, but it's not even art, like, you know, that cultural appropriation type stuff.
Yeah.
So she uses that workshop then to, because Uncle Joe has developed this amazing entrepreneurial business over decades, where the Skeens produce, among other things, you know, boomerangs and other artifacts for sale for tourism. It's made by mob, sort of thing. So there's just going to be some interesting opportunities open up for us to do things on our own terms. And I think, you know, the main thing is that we tell stories. You know, when you hear that thing, stories in inverted commas, I don't know what people think. You tend to find people are getting all, you know, ready to sit down and hear about the dream time in inverted commas or something like that.
Yeah.
But the reality is what we're doing is it's through our lens. You know, this is our experience. This is through our lens. These are the timings, the considerations, the protocols, the ceremonies, the whatever's our experiences through our lens for them to consider.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, then that gives them pause. If that's all we achieve, if it just gives them pause to reconsider, and then that is a you know, that stays in their psyche, then it's a good day.
It's at the tours of a safe and culturally sensitive experience to visitors, but one wouldn't really wrap this up without talking about the importance of environmental stewardship and ecological knowledge.
So I'll give you an example. When we were up there the other day, I had a local TO. She's like my little sister, Madonna Thompson. She's Uncle Neville Bonner's granddaughter/grandniece. Cultural knowledge holder, wonderful human being. I had a yarn to her. Somehow the topic of the river came up. And I said to her, you know, just quietly and respectfully, I said, Sissy, your river, I always get this feeling of whenever I look at it, you know, it's beautiful and all that. She's beautiful and all that. But I always get this feeling about sadness. I always get this feeling about grief and that it's not very well, you know. And we sort of stopped what we're doing, and that was the start of this yarn. And what I didn't know was, well, she said, well, there's actually a reason for that. The yarn is that down river from where we are, which is Kangaroo Point, down river down near Hamilton there, there was two places you could walk across the river. One was up at Toowong, and one was down towards Hamilton. The one down Hamilton was because there was a sandstone reef down there. And that sandstone reef meant that it was close enough to the surface so that the fresh water coming down ran over the top of the salt water, and the salt water it couldn't get high enough so that it could get over the reef so that the river was tidal. So prior to this particular event that happened, and there's colonial records where, you know, all the way up, so the river itself was a lot narrower, the banks were a lot less steep. You know, an erosion will do that, but they also, you know, they also carved or blew the stone out of the cliffs around Kangaroo Point, sort of south bank. But they've got records that say there was all these billabongs all the way up. The records that Madonna told me about was that these fellows, these colonials, they were in a boat up around Ipswich, where Ipswich is now. And their records said that the bottom of the river's aggregates, like gravel, and in fact, like up at Kurilpa Point, there's a concrete plant, and they were just using all the gravel out of the river there, you know. I don't think they still use it. Anyway, the yarn was that at that time, you could stand in your boat and look at the deepest part of the river and see clearly to the bottom, you could see the smallest pebble in clear detail. But what ended up happening was they wanted to get ships up into, I guess it's a city now, but it must have been a town then. It was in the... I can't remember, maybe early 1900s. They gel-ignited that sandstone reef. Upriver used to have beaches where mob used to gather and all that sort of jazz, you know, and the river was a whole lot different. But as soon as they blew that reef out, the river became tidal. Now you've got whalers, you know, all the way up and down and all that sort of jazz. So, you know, attempts to tell any of the stories of country here, other than the ones that are contemporary or the ones that we've been told by the TOs that we can, you know, culturally, that's just the way we are. We're just respectful and know our place in that regard. But that would be the example that I would use about one of the stories that we use anyway. And then, you know, I told it to those people there the other day, and they actually could feel the sadness. They looked at the water. I said to them, what colour do you reckon that water is? And that time of day, it was getting towards dusk. They said green. And I said, well, okay, so here's the yarn. You know, if this hadn't happened, but this bridge was here, you'd be standing and you'd probably be able to see the bottom. You might even be able to see the fish swimming around, you know, that sort of stuff.
And now, before I let you go, anything you'd like to add to the conversation? Maybe tell us more about your gallery?
That's really lovely. We've had a fairly recent shift. We were in the CBD all through COVID, and we stayed open and we developed, you know, a whole lot of different, you know, relationships and opportunities, different streams of income and all that sort of jazz. We had to look back as a part of, you know, your regular sort of review, and made a decision that the CBD, the Meanjin CBD, is just not coming back, you know. So anything in the CBD, as a for instance, there's no point in opening on weekends. So 104 days of the year you can't do business. And we just started looking back at it. And one of the things we have begun to do is to tour shows and to do... I think pop-ups doesn't really do it justice. We tend to sort of take artworks in and change the energy of spaces. So nowadays what we're doing, we do recognise the importance of physical space and the importance of place, but we don't actually have the physical gallery anymore. We have partnerships with organisations like Howard Smith Wharves, like North Shore, which is Economic Development Queensland. There's retail spaces like Queens Plaza in the CBD, like Brisbane Quarter in the CBD, where we have an ongoing presence. We spent quite a bit of time setting the CBD straight about, because they used to come along and just sort of say, oh, look, we've got this amazing opportunity for you to take your work out of your commercial gallery space and put it in our foyer for NAIDOC or Rec Week or something, for no good reason, really. And we started working on them about a budget and that sort of stuff. And good relationships have come out of that. We got great partnership relationship with Sobar Beverages, Quinton and Lowe's and Schultz, Gilmeroy lads, down at Burley. We go all the way up to Monto, and we just Sunshine Coast, Kobe Country, and around in town too. But our catering it remains. We got new tenancy over at Cooperoo on the south side, and what we do now is we either have relationships with venues like the Princess Theatre, like the Tivoli, like, you know, there's others around, and again with Howard Smith Wharves, where we set up and we manage events for people, or we do for clients, or we do the catering in their place for them. We still have our openings. We have, you know, the CCDP is the main game for that, and the schedule for those young ones is pretty hectic. It's around about a major piece per fortnight, excluding murals and other commissions. I guess that's a bit of a snapshot of what we're doing, besides the tourism stuff as well, yeah.
And I also forgot to mention that some of the work you do also is really important to help inmates.
Yeah. We've been doing that. One of my closest friends is a lifer, Vietnam vet and lifer, and we've been mates for, you know, well over 20 years. He's gubba, but he's just got skin, you know, like he's done so much for Mobwell on the inside as the head of the Lifers Association and that. So we put together a charity called the Wayne Weaver Foundation, and we do opportunistic pre- and post-release cultural council for mob doing time, with a view to long-term successful transition and reintegration. And that have the unique privilege of, you know, I do call it privilege, it's just weird if you talk about going into a prison, but I've been given an unescorted pass, basically, inside the prisons up here, so I can wander around unescorted. I don't have officers with me, which means I can find the men where they're at, the brothers where they're at. We continue to do that as we can. We're unfunded and completely, you know, kind of overstretched, but that's just what it is. It's not a complaint, it's just the reality of the situation, so we're kind of limited to what we can do at times.
Yeah, but a great job really helping successful reintegration in the community.
It's a biggie. Yeah, thanks, bro.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on NITV Radio and SBS Friend. Thanks for joining us.
Mundungiwa, thank you, brother. Thank you.